This episode of Beyond the Uniform is sponsored by Warfighter Hemp, whose mission is to provide our nation's veterans with organic, non-addictive, non-psychoactive means to manage pain, lower anxiety, and improve the overall quality of their lives. 50% of Warfighter Hemp's profits go back to veterans. In episode number 218, I spoke with Warfighter Hemp's founder, Steve, and since then, I've been a fan of both their company and their products. Warfighter Hemp is offering Beyond the Uniform listeners 20% off their first purchase using the promo code BTU20 at checkout. That's BTU20. Thanks and enjoy today's episode. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to help members of the military community succeed in their civilian career. Today's episode number 301 with Yolanda Clark.
Don't be so fixated on your plan, though, that you miss an opportunity. I like to think of them as sniper positions. It's like you just build this place and it's really strong and you can do what you got to do from this position. And if the targets don't come across, then move to the next one. But be ready so that when the opportunity does cross your path, you know, that's my target. I know exactly that's what I want. And you can pull the trigger. Boom, it's happening.
This interview is a lot about entrepreneurship, but I would really encourage you to listen to it, even if you know or think you know that you don't want to start your own company. I love the way that Yolanda's brain works. She, just like me, is an introvert, and she just had a way of phrasing things and a way of explaining things that really resonated with me. And I've been doing entrepreneurship for 10 years and just appreciated a lot of her tactics, a lot of her advice. As an example, usually I think the conventional wisdom is the Nike slogan, just do it. If you want to be an entrepreneur, just dive in, take the leap. And I appreciated Yolanda's methodical way of approaching her own decision to start a company and how she was constantly refining a plan and was very deliberate and intentional in how she started the company. And she's a military spouse. She's a veteran as well. I think that she had a lot of nuance around how that impacted her decision. And I also love her thoughts around networking. And this is the 301st episode. I ask about networking a lot. And she shared advice that I was taking notes for myself that I plan to use. Things that I'd never heard before, but are incredibly insightful. So I hope you enjoy this episode, regardless of your intended career path. As always, at beyonduniform.org, you'll find show notes with links to everything we discuss, a text transcript of this interview in case you want to go back and revisit parts, and over 300 episodes just like it. You'll also find we have a new swag section of our website where you can purchase Beyond the Uniform gear, hats, t-shirts, polo shirts. They are sold at cost to members of the military and military veterans. We ask for a small donation of a couple bucks for non-veterans, or if you want to give $5 to support the show. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Yolanda Clark. Well, joining me today in San Diego, California, my guest is Yolanda Clark. Yolanda, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thanks. It's nice to be here.
Special thanks to Lauren Grimshaw from episode 251, who recommended Yolanda for the show. And I wanted to give a quick bio on her. She is the CEO of Powder River Industries, which focuses on the management and technical needs of the U.S. government. She served in the Army as an intelligence officer. She worked at Lockheed Martin for over 12 years. She serves as city leader for Bunker Lab San Diego, is the co-founder of a DEF chapter in Monterey, is a military spouse, and is in the Army Reserves. And somehow amidst all of those things, she was able to take time to speak with us. So thank you, Yolanda.
You're welcome. You're making me feel like I should be doing something else right now. It's a long list.
Well, maybe we should start with a ton of ways to go here, but let's just start with you're walking down the street, you run into a veteran, and they say, Yolanda, what is it that you do for a living? What is Powder River Industries? How do you explain that to them?
I mean, it depends on their role, right? I would probably ask them questions first, like, what's your experience? What's your background? Because everybody's veteran experience is really different. So at a high level, what does Powder River do? We sell computer hardware, software, and the services to support that. And that's the simplest way in under 10 words I can say what we do. But the impact of that, we enable communication for the U.S. government, and the types of messages that the U.S. government might be sending can vary from ship-to-ship communications, morale and welfare calls from troops downrange to their families, critical strategic mission communications. So the impact can be very significant. And I do drive the work that we do towards those mission critical spaces.
Hmm. What was the genesis? Like, where did this even come from?
I've always, I guess the genesis of communications, I've always been really curious about how people understand each other. I've always been really interested in international business, international relations. Growing up watching 60 Minutes and the news and C-SPAN with my parents and looking at the conflict in the world and how conflict was resolved, and just wanted to be a part of how people in the world could better understand each other. And so that's a really big spectrum, and how do you find a niche to where what's your part in that? And there's a lot of ways. I mean, there's like language and translation and writing and journalism, and for me, I was drawn to the technical aspects of it and how do you communicate across continents. And how do you, especially when you have major threats and risks in the world, you know, like intercontinental ballistic missiles, like that's a big deal. How do we make sure that that never happens? Like nobody wants that. So, but that means that people on one continent have to communicate with people on another continent. And that always just fascinated me. So when I was pursuing an undergraduate degree, that's the direction I went, is into the mechanical space of communications.
And I'm just thinking, you know, my background is 10 years as an entrepreneur, but in software for marketing, the stakes could not be lower. And so when you describe your mission, it's like, I mean, it's just a very daunting hurdle to overcome. And it's almost like, in contrast for me, I picture startup, I picture early stage, I picture just trying to get things together. And then the mission you described and the types of missions you're supporting is like, that is like incredible. Like, how did you realize there was a need that you could fill in this space?
Boy, you're really good at big questions. I guess it started out just purely academic. When I was enlisted, I was a medic, and I talked to people from every different career field and every branch of service and their family members. And I would, you know, you're distracting them from pain while you're giving them stitches or doing something that they're not really excited about. So tell me about what you do. Do you like what you do? You know, and you'd hear all these great stories from different people. And it was the stories of the guys coming back from the field that made the mission happen. I mean, you had the guys downrange and they were all ready to pull the trigger, and you had the guys in the back giving strategic guidance and, you know, like, hey, go here, go there. But it was these guys in the middle that made the time. Like, if you were competing for time, it was the guys in the communication fields that were making the mission happen. They were the ones that were buying 15 extra seconds so that troops could move from one grid square to another and not get blown up, you know. And that to me seemed like, as a medic, I was like, wow, that sounds like preventive medicine. Let's help, you know, like, I could be a part of that. And so when I started to take the, you know, got the opportunity to to go to school while I was serving and, you know, use tuition assistance and my GI Bill and all that. That was the choice I made, was just to sort of follow in their footsteps. I was like, well, what are you studying? What class are you going to take? What degree are you getting? And so I was really motivated by the people and the stories of the people that I was serving with. So that's how I got into it. But as far as the company, working in large business, large industry, I worked at Lockheed Martin, as you mentioned, for a long time, and I did proposals and business development, especially while I was deploying and training for deployments. I learned about the challenges of small business within the federal contracting space. There's a congressional mandate of 23% of all federal contracts that have to go to small businesses. And while I was creating solutions and putting together the solution to solve some major problem space at Lockheed, we would then have to also include the small business piece of that and the contributions. And so it was always really challenging to find credible small businesses that you could trust, that had a very rugged and enduring business infrastructure that could keep pace with the very long, very challenging contracts that we were winning and executing. And so that pain that I experienced, and it was painful. I mean, you would have to come up with some pretty creative combinations of different small business strategies to ensure that you could deliver to your customer, ensure that that mission was supported, and then also not hurt the small business or the economic situation or conditions of the small place where they were. Oftentimes the small businesses come from small cities, small communities, and when you're doing business at that scale and you're talking about a percent of a $1 billion contract, now you're talking 23% of a $1 billion contract, that percentage in an economically depressed area can have an amazing impact on the community. And so just puzzling over that year after year at Lockheed and really diving deep into this problem space, I realized that there was a place for me to continue to serve in mission spaces that I am very passionate about and support the big companies that I love and the communities that I love. So I was able to bring, and that's what I do. I do focus a lot on the economic impact, economic empowerment, economic diversity from the small business space. And it's amazing to be able to enable that through the experiences that I had in large industry, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah, this is great. There's a couple things I want to come back to, but I just love the deliberateness there. Of considering the impact that happens in a small business and a small community, because I hadn't thought, when you lay out the numbers like that, it is actually like incredible to think of how that could shift an entire town, an entire region. I want to come back, because you talked about credibility. We'll come back to that in a second, but when was there a moment at Lockheed Martin when you were like, I'm going to do this? Like, and along with that, had you always thought like, I want to start a company, or was that quite sudden?
It was kind of like watching a glacier move. pretty dramatic, but slow. I knew that I had this spirit, this fire to do something. I wasn't sure. I mean, there was plenty of opportunities at Lockheed, and I certainly took advantage of those when I was able to, and definitely know that I made an impact there and the communities I was with there. But it probably was the crisis of the military spouse narrative that really triggered me. How do I say this? I guess I ended up marrying an active duty Marine, which as an Army person, that sent, you know, that if we stayed in those conditions, it would send us in opposite directions. So I didn't want to do that. So, And my husband is very passionate about his career as well. So, you know, we make the choice. You've probably heard this one a million times. And I was able to stay with Lockheed for a while, but I started to find myself really fighting hard for the middle. And I was getting more and more academic credentials and more professional experiences that really didn't warrant, in all cases, the middle anymore. And we were PCSing, and as my husband's career advanced, the PCS, the change of duty station cycle, started to move faster. And so my career had to change faster also. And at a certain point, I had to step back and say, for the level of effort that and the energy that I'm putting into this, if I were to put this much energy into different conditions, are there conditions that exist where the outcomes could be better? And what does that mean? You know, like one more, and all of that. And so, and then the only answer that came back was entrepreneurship. And that was in my mind at the time. That was the only equation I could see where that if I put this much effort in, then this much output is the potential. So I took the leap. I mean, it wasn't really a leap. It was like a shuffle.
That's incredible.
And a shuffle, shuffle, shuffle. And then, you know, we PCS'd to a place where there was no Lockheed footprint. There really weren't any major partners in the area that I had worked with at Lockheed. So I was like, it's now or never. Let's do it.
Did you, so if I'm understanding correctly, there's kind of like a services component and a software component. Let me just stop there. Is that correct, or is it mainly software?
There's a lot of hardware.
Okay, hardware. Right. Okay, yep.
Yeah, I mean, so we support everything from, I mean, if you're, well, we don't want to bore all of the listeners, but yeah, we do support the hardware frameworks, the baseline infrastructure, software that sits on top of that, and then the operations of that. So we have some subject matter experts on specific applications, Oracle, Tanium, things like that. And so we're kind of covering that full spectrum for different customers.
So when you move to a new location, like how does one even start this sort of company? Like you have to obtain, I'm guessing you have to obtain the hardware and the software. There's like so much infrastructure to support this. Was that, were you purchasing that somewhere? Were you developing it? Did you find someone? Like how did that take us through? Like when you're like, all right, day one, I'm starting this company. Like what does that first year even look like?
Well, day one, I'd say for years prior to day one, I had been writing a business plan, sometimes rewriting it twice a year just to see, like, I learned something. Am I really ready? Am I really ready? And I put a literal project plan together for the business. And I did everything I could before I started the company within the time that I had, you know, go to work at Lockheed, do the things, and then come home. And what in my project plan can I do today? And then once that list was done and all that remained was stuff that was going to take my full-time attention, that was day one of the company. So I'd probably been working a couple years prior on all of the bits, you know, like corporate structures and logos and branding and websites and all of that stuff. And I just kept a head on it. Like it's not ready. And then, so I remember the day we PCS'd on the 4th of June, it was a Saturday, and I had my first business meeting on the 6th of June that Monday.
Wow.
In our new location.
I mean, what I love about that is it flies in opposition to what I think is the traditional narrative, which is someone getting street cred for just, oh, F it, I'm just going to make this leap. And I appreciate the meticulousness of your doing what you could while you had income, while you had a job. And I'm also guessing that as this idea stewed and percolated, and as you learned more and applied it to it, had you jumped off years earlier it might have been half-baked. I'm imagining like you were able to incorporate new information that made it more robust and gave it a higher probability of surviving out of the gates when you didn't have all the support structure of a job and a career and all these things paying the bills.
100%. And you're very perceptive. I mean, even then on day one, the 6th of June, 2016, I continued to do things exactly backwards of what the Small Business Administration recommends or any entrepreneur publication recommends. And I'm grateful for that, honestly. So some of the things I did, everywhere we've been. So that was 2016. This is 2019 and in our third duty station. Mm-hmm. So every time we move, I think I'm getting better at it. I think I've learned some things. Mm-hmm. And every time we move, it started with that first PCS. I just dig hard into the community where we are. I hit the Small Business Administration offices, the local offices there, find out what's going on with the business community in that area within my industry, and all of the infrastructure for business within that community. I think it, especially fast forward to San Diego, definitely have some templates for that more practice than I did in the beginning. The SBA, there's another, it's a partnership of the Defense Logistics Agency and the local government and grants. It's called PTAC, Procurement Technical Assistance Center. I hit that. Now, 3 years in with some first growth under our belt, I am leaning more into the SBDCs, the Small Business Development Centers. And these are all resources that are mostly free and available to anybody. Mm. So I just camped out there. I mean, I don't have anywhere else to be. Mm. Let's talk about all the things. Tell me everything. I'm not leaving.
and I want to ask about this. So you probably don't even remember this, but when we schedule these interviews, we've got like a little questionnaire. We ask like what things you'd want to talk about. And you had written in there at the time, deliberate networking, intentional mentoring. I'm assuming that some of that kind of plays into this, but what advice do you have around that? Like, I admire the tenacity. I love the willingness to put yourself out there and just to kind of hit the ground and get plugged in right away. And I realize that some people are intimidated by that. What advice do you have around that deliberate networking, intentional mentoring, role models, and things like that?
Oh, I've learned a lot about that. It's not in my nature. Like, I'm 100% introvert. So it's not in my nature to just throw myself out there. So for me, having a plan is key. Knowing what my goals are, like, I have the big goals, but what are the incremental steps to get there? And what do I need? What are the resources I need to make that happen? This small goal, this midterm goal, this long-term goal. And then what does that resource look like? Okay, it looks like someone who has experience in state and local contracting or federal contracting, or someone who has access to be able to pick up a phone and call a contracting officer who's not going to talk to me because I am the vendor. What do they look like? And then how do I find that person? And going to these places where the door is open, they literally exist for you to walk through that door and ask them any question you could possibly think of for your business. And oftentimes I didn't know what I didn't know. So I would just, when I first started, I would schedule like health and welfare checks. I'd come in and say, this is where I am today, like once a month with my PTAC, my Procurement Technical Assistance Center. And these are people with 30 years of experience in this, and they see tens of hundreds of companies a year in all different industries coming and going all the time, to include the ones you're in, whether that's agriculture, food and beverage, retail, whatever, hospitality. They see all different types of companies. So there's a lot of innovation that can exist because of that, because they see what works in other industries. When you go in with a completely open agenda of, this is where I am on my accounting, my finance, my contracts, my legal, my staffing, my HR, my communications, this is how I'm spending my time. Am I missing something? They'll say, they can then look at you and say, well, tell me more about the accounting. What are you doing there? I watched some webinars on QuickBooks. What are you doing? We have a class and we'll get you come in on this class on Thursday for an hour. And we will tell you exactly what you need to know to use QuickBooks for your industry. Stop wasting time all over the internet watching YouTube videos. It's a waste of time. Like, wow, thanks. Thanks. That's amazing. I didn't know that you did that. So when you give people a chance to show you their genius, they do. and then that's you get amazing. To learn from that. Yeah. Yeah. So, and then when you go to I don't go to every coffee. You hear this all the time. I don't go to every networking event. When I do, I make sure I know who's attending. What do I want to know from that person? What would I say to them if I had 30 seconds? Because that could happen. That really can happen. Oftentimes I'll write a note, just a small little note to the person, because my natural introversion may kick in and I may not have the confidence to go bust through all the people around them to get to them to say, I sell computer hardware and software. Let's talk. Awkward, super awkward. So I'll just have that note in my pocket. And I'll pay attention to who that person that I want is talking to, who seems to be a friend with them, who has good access to that person, because they're always there with someone. They're not there by themselves. And somebody they're with is probably being ignored because nobody knows them. So I'll strike up a conversation with them and say, hey, what are you doing here? Why did you come? And they'll say, oh, I'm friends with so-and-so, or we're going to an event later and I just, you know, figured I'd come for the free drinks until we're ready to go. Like, oh, really? Yeah, they're an amazing person. I really love the article they wrote on this, this, and this. Like, oh, and now you have something to talk about. And then I can say, you know what? I'm never going to get a chance to get to talk to that person, but would you mind giving this note to them?
That's so great. That is so awesome. Wow.
And you make it the size of like pocket swag. Like, how many of us come home from work at the end of the day and we just unload our pockets and it's just like, I'm exhausted, I'm going to bed. The next morning you wake up and you're like, what did I collect? You know, some string, some gum, a marble, what is this? Receipts. And it's like the size of a receipt. But so you're going to open it and you're going to look at it and go, whoa, wow, somebody actually wrote me something. That's amazing. And I still to this day have monthly contacts with people that I did that with. It's phenomenal.
That's so exceptional. That is so, that's different level. I love it. you talked about the, you know, that you move, you're settled, you've started your business, you have this meeting on Monday. Are you thinking about like, is that meeting fundraising? Is it partnership, or are you selling kind of what you're going to be doing to a potential customer? Like how did you think about those first couple of weeks?
So that first meeting was someone who was very instantiated in our industry, 100% influencer, subject matter expert. I guess I will say in my space, you never win alone. You always are winning work with a team. I've never had a single success on my own because of just one single thing I did. It's always with teammates, partners, recommendations, whatever. So it was that specific meeting was around teaming. And actually, we got pretty far down the path of potentially doing a joint venture. That's probably still on the table. But because he wasn't moving, he's static. He's been in that community for 30 years, never moved, knows everybody, and has everybody on his board in this space that I wanted to be competing in. You go in very humbly with an offering like, hey, I can bring value to you in the following way. is that a value? I think that you wouldn't have taken this meeting if you didn't think that was a value. What is it? What do you want to explore about that? What do I bring to you that you don't have on your own as a partner? And then you just take the conversation from there.
That's incredible. And I love that, you know, the desire to learn from different people along the way. And I love your quote earlier, which I wrote down, about us, when you give people a chance to show you their genius, they do. I love that opportunity to give them to shine. One thing I wanted to circle back with is credibility. And I always think of credibility with startups, but even more so, you outline that your space, it is so much about credibility. You're having these billion-dollar contracts. They need people reliable. And when you're first starting out, you don't have much to go on. What advice do you have around establishing credibility, or what worked for you in terms of having basically a business plan and working to where you are now?
Okay. So that, I mean, in retrospect, I think I had amazing mentors and guides when I was young and coming up in my academics and my professional career, starting out in Lockheed at a pretty young age and growing up there, I made a lot of contacts, I had a lot of amazing role models to guide me and show me what it meant to be a leader in this industry. So I could take the good, the bad, whatever, and make it my own, make my own version of that. And then when I started out on my own, I don't have current work with Lockheed. I haven't partnered with them since I left. I probably pivoted two or three significant times, just in lessons learned. People, I know they watch, you know, some of my, advisors, I guess, and mentors from the past, they watch. And now that we're 3 years old, I'm starting to get some phone calls, not necessarily from Lockheed, but other people in that space saying, "Hey, I've been watching you. Looks like you've been doing some good stuff. Are you ready to go through this?" So those first years, in my mind, I'm pivoting, but what I was really doing was practicing. And it's very different to have a team of people around you doing a hard thing. Like, you take a day off, it's still going to move forward. That proposal is still going to get done, even if you're not there. Even in the military, you take a day off, you're on sick leave, someone is going to fill the gap of where you were. The work is going to get done. When you're an entrepreneur, as you well know, that does not happen. Mm. And so the pivots were around, honestly, more simple work. I was building the infrastructure for scale and scale in the small business space. I'm never going to I have no aspirations of becoming a Lockheed Martin or a Boeing or something massive like that. I really love the experience in the small business space and the human factors and the personal, connections that you can make with people is very different. Because there's no buffer. You don't have that big team. It is just us, right? So I just had some small wins, little wins, anything just to test that my infrastructure actually worked. Because the buying practices are the same on the most simple basic level of if you're buying a server, if you're buying a can of tuna fish, if you're buying peanut butter, if you're buying a weapon system, the infrastructure for buying within the government is the same no matter what is being sold. So once I was starting to get the initial infrastructure in place, I needed to test that with some smaller wins. And so I went after them hard and like aggressively pursued things I had never done before. I had not ever done anything with hardware or software in terms of sales in the past. That's not my space, but I could get my head around it. Like, okay, let me see. Yes, I can do that thing. Let me do it. And so I did it, and that created confidence, and I made mistakes and I learned from that and I made changes, and then the work got more complex. So you're doing the product side. That's wonderful. Can you do anything on the operations side? Yes, Of course we can. And so then we started to get more into the operation and the services component of it, which honestly was where the boat was pointed when I started. Mm. But the contract cycles for those are like 12 to 24 months, at least on the big stuff. And then on the small stuff, you're looking at 60 to 120 day contract cycles. So you can learn a lot more and quickly from failures in a short period of time, adjust, start getting wins, and then apply those practices to more complex proposals. Mm. And that's very different from, you know, at Lockheed or any other large company. You've got a full infrastructure of pricing and contracts and subcontracts and legal and all these other people and technical solution subject matter experts, solution architects, chief engineers. You have all those things on a team. You do not in a small business. You are the only person doing all those things. Hmm. And so my experience, not having any experience in contracts or subcontracts or legal, that's where my learning curve was steepest, and I had to get up to speed on that stuff, get good mentors, deliberate mentoring. Like, look, you have a huge gap here. Go meet people here. Learn everything you can from them. So now I'm not an expert, but I know enough to be competent on some of these things, and I know the experts now, and that's great on my own. They like the independent contractor types. And so now that infrastructure has been tested and built and hardened and fortified, and we're ready for bigger things.
Hmm. I think that's a fantastic answer, and I am picking and choosing where to dive in because we have limited time. Again, there's so much. I'm just appreciating the way that you put things. I think that it's a different vantage point that I'm used to hearing, and I love the way that your brain works and laying it out in a very logical way. It's very easy to follow. You talked about pursuing these contracts hard, and I always like to try to give listeners some sort of context. Do you have a sense for, let's say, for the first contract that you won, roughly how many contracts did you go after to get that one? Like, what did that pipeline look like? And any advice on what, you know, what did going out hard after that mean? Were you flying to places? Were you sending chocolates? Were you just really putting time into this proposal? Or if you can put some color around that.
Sure. Yeah. Initially I was flying all over the place, because my background, I had spent a lot of time on the East Coast, and that's where my community was and my Army network was. And then we got stationed in the West again and again and again and again. Mm-hmm. So I was flying a lot, and it was exhausting. And at the time, I had a 1-year-old.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
and an active duty Marine. And I was like, this is not sustainable. So I had to embrace the grow where you're planted cliche or mantra or whatever it is. And that's when I did. I mean, I've learned so many new languages in the federal space as a result of that. Just learning the new customers, like, okay, what exists, going back to the networking and the deliberate networking, who's here? And do I have anything to give them? It's like, is there any value I can bring to them? What is it? So really researching your customer, really knowing what they do, learning to speak their language many layers down, like surface, this is their website, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 layers down into areas where I can add value or be a differentiator from something they already have.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did pivot. That was a pivot versus going where I knew, you know, where I was a predictable character on the scene in the networking space. Like, let's go to some unpredictable places. Let's go places you've never been before, which led to the deliberateness of it. Just because I was prepared to talk in depth on one topic. So I really could only talk to a couple people because they're the only ones who would care. Nobody else cared. And so the numbers, the metrics around it, I set a goal to bid at least 10 proposals a month, which is aggressive, but what else did I have to do? So some months I bid 10, I think the biggest month I bid 17.
Wow.
And I did it from my dining room in base housing at the time. Wow. And so I'd wake up in the morning and I'd like at 2, because I was on the West Coast, so I'd get up at like 2 or 3 in the morning, see what was out there, what was available to be bid because I wanted to be on East Coast hours because I knew those guys were already up and looking at everything. So let me get on par with my competition. And then I'd spend hours reading and researching anything that I could do, anything I could do. And then by about 6 or 7 in the morning, I could pivot to writing. And so I would write and spend the rest of the day writing and getting things submitted. And I bid on things for all over the Navy, the Senate, the Congress, Department of State, every federal agency, USDA, FAA, FDA, NASA, everywhere. And I lost so many. But the thing that happens when you lose is you can request a debriefing. Okay, that's interesting and humbling because you're already leveled because you lost. You're like, I'm a loser. Okay. Now, please, stranger, tell me why I lost. Tell me all the ways that I am a loser. Like this is such a mental experience. But what happens is you're now talking to a person where before you were not. Now you have a real person with a name and a contact information. You have their email, you have their phone number, and you can slowly start to pitch them. Like, I did not know that mattered to you. Thank you. Tell me more about why that matters. Ah, okay. Yeah, that reminds me of an experience I had. XYZ and like, oh, I was there. You were stationed. I was in that unit. You were in that unit. My brother's in that unit. Oh my gosh. And now you're developing a rapport with people, which is a win in and of itself. So eventually you learn from all your failures and you pivot and you win and you adjust. And if you don't, then you need to move on because, but you better learn from that. So I probably bid over 175 different types of contracts.
Wow.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. And I think that that's just it's good for people to hear just any number like that. That's a lot. It's probably more than most people would think. And the truth is that's probably a lot lower than most people who try to do this. You know, most people might take 400 or 500. And I love your thought of the rapid iteration and just learning and that willingness to have that awkward conversation of like, so why did you shoot me down? That takes a lot of courage to do that. And my sense is that 99% of the entrepreneurs I speak with or aspiring entrepreneurs, they have assumptions that things will be easier than they actually are. Like most people listening probably would have thought you submitted 5 and then you got 1. And so to have some context of like, there are hundreds of these. And I imagine it's no simple feat to even submit 1, let alone 175 of them. The other part of this that I think that listeners may misrepresent is how long it takes in starting a company to be able to feed oneself. And you were smart in that you had a career. I'm imagining you built up some amount of savings. You also had a partner who was working, so that gives you more room. But what would you say for listeners? Like, how long should they assume from starting a company until not just even generating revenue, but generating revenue that they could even pay rent or buy ramen or something? Do you have a sense of that timing or what it was like for you?
Yeah, I think it's going to be different for everybody. You're right. I mean, I knew because I had spent years planning before I ever had my day one, I was also saving. We changed lifestyles significantly. We were stationed in Hawaii at the time. The cost of living is really high. And we shifted to living off one income. Like, let's see if we can do this. And if we can do this in one of the highest cost of living areas in the world, we're going to be okay. And we did it. And we were able to do that, which was great. So then I was able to put all of my salary into savings. And it also helped us start to just – I think that's one – a friend of mine – I have a lot of friends in the entrepreneur space now. And a friend of mine said it very well. She's like, my husband married a teacher. He did not marry an entrepreneur. This is challenging our relationship, right? Because so you go through so much as a person when you become an entrepreneur. And so doing those changes early on before we took the full risk sandwich, you know, like let's see what this is like. And so that helped us get through a lot of that major change on a personal level in our lives. Like, can we do this? Yes, we can. We worked through all that issue up front. So then when I took the leap and I put myself into this new situation with all this new pressure and stress in new ways, and I'm completely 100% confident there is a form of PTSD that only pertains to entrepreneurs. Having been one now, I'm like, this is different than anything in the world. Mm-hmm. That helped a lot. Having a partner of any kind, I get this now in retrospect, whether that's a business partner, a life partner, a brother, a best friend, someone that is in your life, that is going to be in your life, that is going to help you on Maslow's hierarchy of needs at that bottom layer. Who's going to feed you, clothe you, like make sure that you see daylight. Mm-hmm. You need somebody in your life, somewhere, just someone that you can count on, to get to feeding yourself. I mean, in my space, I would say it depends on your plan and it depends on what kind of company you want to have. For me, I think I was an exception. I think this was a little bit of an outlier because of all the prior planning, but I probably could have been eating ramen on my own after about 2 years. However, I have chosen to reinvest as much as possible back into this infrastructure because we are in a highly regulated environment. Mm-hmm. And these regulations apply to smalls just the way they apply to larges. And that is an overhead cost that's quite hefty. And that to me is what hardens or ruggedizes my company, is the fact that I took that extra year in that major first growth year and I spun it around and pushed it all right back into mm-hmm. the company. Which I am hoping, I'm hopeful, knock on wood, that is going to be the platform for the next growth. Because if we had a year, like last year we had 11x growth. I mean, that makes banks, investors nervous. Like what? If we have another X factor a year, the base of that has to be so strong. Like how are we going to add exponentially more people to this, exponentially more customers, exponentially more cash flow through this? What is that going to do? How are we going to manage that? And that takes some thought. You have to be prepared for success. Mm-hmm. And it's work. Growth is way harder than startup.
I love that. It's funny because the number in my mind was 2 years. And then I think that, you know, hearing what you're saying, you make a good case, which is you can't just pull that money out. You have to double down. You have to go headlong into reinvesting in the business. I know we're starting to run out of time. One thing I just wanted to ask is, let's say someone's on active duty. They have an idea for starting a company. How would you advise them to think about obtaining an MBA like you did, and obtaining industry experience, which you did, and it seems like both of those helped you? How would you help them weigh out, you know, whether or not to just dive into this new venture versus getting one of those or both of those first?
What are your conditions? If you're a person that has a strong family, a strong partner, a strong life, have you been saving? Did you go on deployments? You have a bunch of savings. Where are you going to live? What's your lifestyle that you want to live? Are you willing to, and I mean, it like you are going to be living a whole different lifestyle from active duty. if you choose to go the entrepreneur route, you will not be active duty anymore. No one's paying BAS, BAH. It's a totally different conditions. Are you willing to do that? Do you have the infrastructure around you, the people around you to help you in the base layers of Maslow's hierarchy of needs? And then what is your why? And you hear that a lot, but you need to connect so strongly with your why, and you need to be so passionate about it that, because it's the only thing that's going to pull you through those incredibly hard times, grinding months and months of no wins and everything is hard. Why are you doing this?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because if you don't have that connection to the success at the end of your adventure that you've chosen for yourself, you're not going to have anything to pull you through. So there are ways, and I think if you have it in your mind, if that's there, the going into the industry where your idea lives, and that's the ecosystem where your idea can live, I think it's an important step, even if you do it for 2 years, to get your ecosystem that your company's going to need. You need that network, you need those contacts, and you need to be able to discern what is value and what is not value for where you put your time and who you spend your time with. You may find your partner in that space. If you don't have a partner, you might find that person while you're on that journey, because this person's also going to care about what you care about. That's really important. Getting an MBA, I had this conversation on a panel recently, and I don't think you need it. If your why is so strong and you are so passionate and committed and you put yourself in conditions for success and you build your ecosystem or you get in the ecosystem where you can succeed, I don't think you need it. I think it's an important credential if you want to grow. Investors look at that. Banks look at it. It'll give you confidence to say, well, I have an MBA. I must know how to do this. Actually, well, maybe not. Just now, because MBAs are about de-risking business and startup for those first few years, and then you find yourself in a loop again doing something that's related to startup in your company. There's not much about an MBA program that prepares you for that. I find my MBA is more useful now that I'm moving into some steady state operations than startup. So you could get there and then go get an MBA. But there's so many resources. There's incubators and the resources in the community that you can go to where you can find those subject matter experts in areas where you need help.
Mm. I love that. I'm just taking a note. I think that there's so much that I appreciate about what you're saying. I just want to try and squeeze in another question quickly about you have no shortage of demands on your time. You have a family. We don't have to list the laundry list of all these things going on. You're doing reserves. How did you reconcile that? How did you choose to continue with reserves amidst a crazy schedule?
Oh, I'm just so stubborn. I hate quitting so much. Mm-hmm. Like, I just hate it. Fortunately, the Army Reserves is a very massive organization. And so there's a lot of different options mm-hmm. for reserves. Right now I'm inactive. And that's largely because of my husband's current military tempo and the demands of his life and the swing that creates for me and the flexibility I need there. I'm pretty choosy about shopping for units at this point. It has to be some mission that I really care about, because the why matters to me so much, as you've heard. It has to be around people that I really care about, because that is my why. And it is those people. So yeah, I just am really choosy about the units, the people in the units, who I'm serving with, why we're doing what we're doing. And then it really doesn't feel like, it just feels like going back home. It's a good anchor point, honestly, for as much craziness and change that happens in my life. I'm not a Marine, and I'm in the Marine Corps. Mm. community all the time, it's really nice to go back home sometimes and be with my people and remember where I came from and how I got here in the first place.
That's great. I always like to leave the last question open-ended. We covered a tremendous amount of ground. There's a million different things we could have talked about. Either what did we not talk about you want to make sure listeners know, or what's one parting piece of advice you'd want to leave with listeners?
I don't know. I guess that's too broad. I'm sorry. I don't know. I mean like books or podcasts or I don't know. Have a plan, be flexible in your plan, just have sub plans and be able to adapt to your conditions. Don't be so fixated on your plan though, that you miss an opportunity. I like to think of them as sniper positions. It's like you just build this place and it's really strong and you can do what you got to do from this position. And if the targets don't come across, then move to the next one, but be ready so that when the opportunity does cross your path, you know, that's my target. I know exactly that's what I want and you can pull the trigger. Boom. It's happening. So that's been my business model really, is to create a business where real work can happen. And then when those opportunities come across, I know it because I've been researching 3, 4, 5 different specific mission spaces so much, it's unavoidable. Like, that's my target. You are my partner. I've been waiting for you. Let's go do the business. Like, awesome.
Oh man. Well, Yolanda, I really, really appreciate your time. I'm shocked that this is your first podcast interview, but I imagine it's going to be the first of many, but it's a real honor to have you on. I just think you've got a great voice and perspective and feel privileged to share this with Beyond Uniform audience. Surface. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Quick couple admin points. We release brand new episodes every single Monday and Thursday. Those are usually recorded about a month or so before they go live. Every Monday and Thursday, we have an interview, usually almost always with a military veteran about their civilian career. More and more, we're starting to add in experts who may not be veterans, but may have some expertise that will help the military veteran community. Saturdays, I typically post more of a behind the scenes episode, which is a free form format. I try to use what I'm calling a mullet format. And by that, I mean business up front, party in the back, talking through admin points, professional topics related to the podcast. It might be a conversation I had that week. It might have been an interview I had that week, but just trying to share things that are top of mind that may help you in more of a free form, straight from the heart format. And then the party in the back is the personal side of things, just kind of more free-flowing thoughts on life, on improving oneself, just kind of whatever's going on in life and trying to be authentic and honest about those things as well. Special thanks. We have an all-volunteer army of people behind Beyond the Uniform making this possible. We do this on our lunch breaks, on our evenings, on our weekends, because we love the military community. We want to give back. We want to make a difference. We want that as part of the purpose in our life that we valued in the military. So special thanks to Steve Bain. Steve does pretty much everything. He helps secure guests. He does our newsletter. He keeps the reels rolling and keeps me sane. Kathleen Dillon, the first person to join our team. She writes text transcripts of every single episode. It's wild. She keeps up with 2 of these a week despite a demanding career and education right now. But those transcripts help us get more SEO value, helps her audience more. Andrew Woolridge is our data guru. He helps us understand the numbers, which is the easiest way for us to figure out how we can better support you, and adds kind of the data oversight for that. Rick Healy does all of our social media. He is gaining more and more of an audience for us by getting our videos, getting our podcasts out on social channels. The best way to stay in contact with us is if you go to beyondtheuniform.org, there is a newsletter
You'll have a little pop-up that comes up. You can put your email in. We email twice per month. We try to be respectful, but it is a great way to get appraised of upcoming events, upcoming interviews, promos where companies are giving discounts to Beyond the Uniform listeners, and more. This does cost money to put on. We are committed to not charging veterans directly. And the way that we kind of offset costs is through corporate sponsors. So if you know of a company that would like to get in front of a military audience and their families, that's one way that we can both add value to our members, but also offset the costs of Beyond the Uniform and give us a little bit of budget to start expanding what we're doing. So that's the best way you can help us. If that's not something that you can do, a positive review on iTunes is greatly appreciated. Have a wonderful week. We will be back Monday, Thursday, and Saturday with more interviews. And keep up the listening. Take care.